Your center of gravity is there. There's vital organs there that if they get damaged, you're in big trouble.
Mm-hmm. Welcome to the Marketing Study Lab podcast with me, Peter Sumpton, the Lego master of marketing and marketing consultant, providing you with the building blocks you need to be a successful marketer. This intro lasts about 1 minute, so feel free to skip forward if you've heard all this before. I seriously won't be offended. If you're new to the show, we chat to amazing people to give you practical advice you can implement right now that will make you and your marketing truly awesome. The conversations we have will lead you to the actionable marketing knowledge you've been craving, and now you've found it, so you can relax and enjoy the rest of the show. Thanks to all those that have left a 5-star Apple Podcast review. It's the best way to support what I'm trying to do here. If you have a burning marketing question, you can catch me on LinkedIn. I know I'm supposed to say the links are in the show notes, but let's face it, you've got better things to do than try and find those pesky show notes right now. Enough of the show intro. Let's get on with introducing our guest. Well, it's been a year of change on the podcast as I tried to bring you even more actionable knowledge alongside all the amazing guests we've had in 2020. As this is the last episode of the year, it's an opportune time to take a look at some of the highlights from the podcast during this wonderful year. I'd love to share all the episodes that we've created in 2020, but that feels a little excessive just for one podcast and would probably last 2 days. So I've strung together some memorable moments, some marketing genius, and of course, some actionable knowledge. But as always, starting with a random opener. I think my fave answer came at the start of this month when Lila Smith was on the podcast and I asked her what her favourite line from a musical was. Enjoy and Happy New Year.
Look, I made a hat where there never was a hat. Look, I made a hat where there never was a hat. It, to me, sums up what creativity is and how creativity belongs to everyone, not just artists, not just a painter in the park, which is part of this musical. It's not just that a hat was painted onto a person. It's that the artist chose to create this moment, to create this little hat where there wasn't a hat before. Even on the person in front of him, whose portrait he was painting, there wasn't a hat, but he decided that a hat would make this picture, in his vision, even more real than reality. I think it's astonishing just to think about that. Look, I made a hat where there never was a hat.
From hats to content. And when Andy Lambert from Content Cal came on the podcast, I asked him, if time is tight and you're a one-man band or a small business that hasn't got the time to implement a really strong content strategy, what do you do?
How do I mention this without talking about Content Cal? So a key element that I talk about with regards to this, and I will touch on Content Cal, but there are other tools, you know, this isn't dependent on Content Cal for you to be able to do this, but the idea part of, or the ideation around content is a part that it's quite easy to make much better, because what we want to get away from is something that a lot of our customers struggle with, which is like, you know, you get into work or you sit down at your laptop on a Monday morning and you're like, I need to plan my content for the week. What the hell am I going to say? And we want to transform that by being much more proactive at creating good ideas around content. So we've done a bit of research, right? And that's only a couple of hours worth of endeavor there. But what we want to do is get better with ideation. So for example, Content Cal has a free Google Chrome extension. So that little kind of button that sits on the top right of Chrome. So if you're browsing the web and you find something interesting, just press that button and it's going to save it to your library. same as if you're browsing, if you've got the Content Cal mobile app installed, once again, that's free. Like just browsing on the mobile and you find an interesting tweet or something, you can just press save and it's just going to ping it to your library on Content Cal. Mm. And the point here, right, is that what we want to get away from is just, you know, looking at having the blank canvas approach and going, what do I say? And actually you go into, you know, whether you save this somewhere else or use Content Cal, doesn't matter, but you're going to a place where you've got a whole world of inspiration that's already laid out for you. So content becomes much less hard work because you've just saved things from across the week. So you've actually got a whole load to build from, and you wouldn't believe how much that gets the creative juices flowing because you've got a whole bunch of ideas just pinned there and waiting for you.
Now, Andy spoke about developing content and where you can get inspiration and collective ideas. When I interviewed Martin Sibley, he went on to discuss how you actually get your voice heard, particularly in different markets.
Yeah, I mean, I think with the smartphones we all have in our pockets, like the hardware, and then all of the internet and the software we have at our fingertips, everything you need is there. Mm-hmm. So really, I would say it's just the action, it's the doing. And of course, yeah, as marketers, we do a bit of the thinking and a bit of the strategy. And so obviously for me, I was very much thinking that I wanted to inspire when I started my blog in 2009 now, which is scarily 11 years ago. I wanted particularly to inspire younger disabled kids that, you know, when they grow up, they can do all the things they dream of and that don't let other stereotypes tell them otherwise. And so I was giving talks in little workshops and all that sort of stuff with charities. But I then found that blogging was the way to do that. So when I approached my content, it was like, well, the audience is younger disabled people. The content itself is my lived experiences of working, traveling, dating back in the day when I was single. And so, yeah, obviously I'm just giving that context to me because anyone listening, they may not have a disability. They may not be looking even to talk about their own life situation, but it always comes back to what's the sort of audience you're trying to impact, what's the effect you want them to have from your content. And then really, without then overcomplicating it too much, you just start to find inspiration from things you do, things you hear, conversations you have. Maybe have a little notebook or, you know, a note document on your phone just to jot those ideas down.
Martin went into great detail there about how you can develop your content and really get it out there. My next guest was the ever-present John Asperian. And we covered parts of his book, Finding Your Content DNA, which was out this year. It is a fantastic read, dead easy to read, not too lengthy, but loads of actionable insights, which is why I love it. But what I asked John within this interview is, he says you need to be known for one thing. I wanted to know, how do you find out what that one thing is?
I think it starts really by actually understanding what your place of power is and what you enjoy doing most and what is the maximum value you can bring to the world. So you might be able to bring a lot of value, but it might be something that just makes you miserable, you know, or something that's actually not very valuable, but you absolutely love doing it. Well, that's not brilliant either, because you're probably not going to have a roof over your head. So there needs to be a balance struck between what is the maximum value you can provide while doing something that you enjoy, so that the confluence, you know, the joining point of those two things is really what you want to aim for. But the important thing about being known for one thing is just it's far, far easier to remember a small bit of information. You know, if you try and occupy a small memory slot in someone else's brain, that's much easier than getting them to remember that, oh, he does logo design and he does websites and he writes stuff and he does podcasts as well. And I can't remember. I'm not sure what he's really good at. I don't know. Much easier to say, he's that marketer that plays with Lego all the time, in your case. or in my case, it might be, he's that bloke that's on LinkedIn with his tips and his cartoons all the time. It's just being known for just a very small set of things.
When Joe Glover joined us from the marketing meetup, he had to completely shift what his business model was from live in-person events to going with a more online feel, or fully online feel, for the foreseeable, because his external circumstances changed, which were out of his control. And what I wanted to know was, what were those steps you had to take, or should take, if unforeseen circumstances out of your control that you can't do anything about hit that proverbial fan?
I think you've nailed it in the sense there that you can't really help how you react to things in the first instance necessarily. But I think it is important to allow yourself that opportunity to have that reaction and examine it and figure out why you're feeling what you're feeling. For me, I probably had the benefit of a small amount of time because events were one of the first things to go when coronavirus struck. So even when I did what I did, I was probably 2 weeks ahead of the curve in terms of everyone else starting to work from home and that kind of stuff. So I did have the benefit of a little bit of time. So I was able to examine those feelings. But then the second thing is that, sort of going back to that quote, that you do have the ability to, at some point, you know, after you've worked through those initial feelings, choose how you respond to something. That is a freedom that ultimately nobody can take from you, that you can choose your reaction to certain circumstances. So for me, that was probably reverting to my default personality type, which is just one of sort of general proactivity and one of looking to help people. And that came through in the message that I sent through to the speakers, but also the act of even getting in touch with the speakers. So I think there's a recognition of how you're feeling right now. There's a recognition of the problem, but then there's also a stage which is like, okay, there's this problem. What can we do to solve it? And ultimately it's, I think, one of the greatest things that I've ever, or one of my sort of superpowers, I guess, is a sense of agency, which is that I control my own fate. And even though these things can happen externally, taking the responsibility upon myself to say, okay, it might have changed externally, but this is for me to now solve.
Joe enlightened us there in terms of the steps and the focus and the mental willingness to see your circumstance and know that you're still in charge, even though you're not in charge of what has actually changed. It's how you deal with it that really matters. That is up to you, and that is why you're in charge of it. The next snippet I want to share with you is from the wonderful Winnie Sun. And this is a huge step change because we went detailed into finances. And one question I really wanted to know is, why, especially in the UK, are finances such a taboo subject to talk about?
Yeah, I think the main reason is because for generations now, you know, people use your sort of your balance sheet as your status symbol. So we'll be like, oh my goodness, you know, Mark Cuban is so awesome. Is really Mark Cuban so awesome? He probably is. I don't know. But if you stripped away all that money, would he still be awesome? And if the answer is yes, then that's great. But I do think, I always say money does a really interesting thing with people. Money in many ways, in my opinion, is like alcohol, right? So if you are a nice person before the money came along, you'll be even nicer person once the money comes along. But if you're not a nice person, even with money, you'll become even meaner. So we gotta get to a point where we don't feel like money defines us, but really our persona, our integrity, our kindness to the world, that needs to define us. and understand that money is certainly very, very important. And money is a tool to get us from point A to point B. But we need to be comfortable that to be able to talk about money in order for people who really understand about money to help you. And I think that was a really enlightening lesson I learned very young, right? Because my parents hit complete bottom and they were incredible savers and we needed to go ask for help. And I had to work like 3 or 4 jobs. My sister had to work a whole bunch of jobs. We needed to do whatever we needed to do. Go pick up recycle bowls. We had to, you know, like I worked in my parents' pizza store when I was at 8 or 9 years old, like manning the cash register. And then people who didn't pick up their pizza, we would take that pizza and I'd go to the donut store next door and trade for donuts. Like those are the things that you remember that builds your sort of financial confidence. But once we get to a point where we realize that money doesn't really, it can't define us. If you let it define you, it's only you. None of your friends want to see you go into debt trying to prove that you have money.
From money to body language. As I chatted to Mark Bowden, body language expert, freaked me out a little because when you're on camera, you think, is he checking out my body language? Does he know what I'm thinking? Am I thinking something different to what I'm portraying in terms of my body language? Does he know that? Doesn't he? Anyway, that's by the by. What I wanted to know from Mark is, if you walk into a room of strangers or people you feel have authority, the example I gave was Shark Tank or Dragon's Den, for example, how do you come across as confident? What do we need to do?
Lovely. Yeah. So let's just suggest in those situations, we're looking for people to trust us and see us as credible. Mm-hmm. And you're right, to be confident in us. Doesn't really matter if we're not confident. Mm-hmm. They need to be confident in us. So they need to see behaviors that trigger them with an assumption about us that says, this person is confident, or I'm confident in them. I trust them and I see them as credible. So look, people who don't believe that they're in high risk environments, okay, so will be more open in their body language. They'll take up a little more space and they'll especially be open in areas of the body that are high risk areas from attack.
Okay.
From predators, okay? So before I concentrate on, actually, let's go to the larger body mass for a moment. I'm just gonna step back,
yeah.
Actually. I'm gonna lose these headphones for a moment and just step back here, give you a better view of me.
Sure.
There we go. Hopefully the sound is still coming across, but all I'm doing for you now is open palm gestures at exactly navel height. And I'm really displaying this navel. I can do it with the jacket buttoned up. It doesn't need to be fully displayed there, but I'm doing open palm gestures at navel height as I speak to you right now. Yeah. And I just want you to think in your mind, how confident, calm, assertive, trustworthy, incredible do I come across? And now all I'm going to do is drop my hands down by my side, crunch in my stomach slightly. And now how confident, credible, trustworthy do I come across right now? So there's now you can see I'm more minimized now, taking up less space. Now I'm more maximized, taking up more space. But also, you know, in that scenario, I'm giving you open palm gestures, which is a universal signal for no tools, no weapons, nothing in my hands, nothing to harm you. Yeah. And also I'm open at that navel area, what I call the truth plane, the horizontal plane of truth. And that area is very vulnerable. Your center of gravity is there. There's vital organs there that if they get damaged, you're in big trouble. Mm-hmm. So look, if I'm displaying no tools, no weapons, nothing in my hands to harm you, I'm open at a really vulnerable point on my body, it triggers you with the expectation that I believe there aren't predators in the room, that this is a low risk environment for us. And therefore an environment of high opportunity.
Okay.
Yeah, and this happens in a part of your brain that's about 500 million years old. It triggers your instinct around me. And it's very hard for you to countermeasure that triggering.
Yeah.
Really hard. for you to countermeasure it. So it creates an assumption of Mark is calm, assertive, confident, trustworthy, credible.
From body language to infographics, as I spoke to the amazing Brian Wallace, and I asked, why experts have to use all these buzzwords? Why can't we just use simple language to make people understand our point of view?
I think it makes us sound stupid.
Yeah.
I think that while everybody's chasing for the new thing and the new buzzword, people lack the knowledge to even understand what expertise is. And this is actually where we help people a lot, interestingly. I think that there's a misnomer in today's world between what subject matter expertise is and truly being an expert. So subject matter experts can put on a fancy bow tie and have a nice little haircut and talk to an audience of everybody that's like them in the echo chamber. There's a not as nice word that I'm not going to say on your podcast for it. And you can just imagine there. We'll talk later. So they, in their little cheerleading squad, can talk about things with fancy words that only they know and a select few. And everybody cheers them on to further their industry and validation. But meanwhile, all of these people can't explain it like I'm a five-year-old. They can't explain it to the layman. Mm-hmm. So through the case of infographics, where we come up with a big emotional idea that's story-driven and then data to back it up, we can explain it to the uninitiated and have all of the cheerleaders cheer it on too, because they're like, ah, finally, somebody explained it for us.
And the final snippet I want to share with you today is from the amazing Douglas Burdett, who pretty much reads a book a week on sales and marketing. And I wanted to know if styles have changed throughout the years of writing and topics and marketing in general. What's the crack, Douglas?
I don't know. This may have always been this way. But I've seen a few more books lately that have fables in them, which I find very interesting. And this is not a new thing. I mean, you know, people might argue that something like the Bible, it's full of stories, compelling stories to get a point across. So I don't think this is a new idea. But there have been some where the authors, well, it's either like the whole book is a fable, like The Go-Giver by Bob Berg, or Be Like Amazon, even a lemonade stand can do it, by the Eisenberg brothers, where the whole thing is like that, which is very interesting. And Orrin Claff had a new one called, oh gosh, he's going to kill me. He wrote Pitch Anything, and then his other book had a lot of stories in it. And there was another one I really like called Smash the Funnel by these two fellas, friends of mine who have an agency in Philadelphia. And what they did is they wrote the book, and then they rewrote it before the first one came out, although I saw the first one. In between every chapter, they had the fable. So you were able to see what they were explaining, and then they took you through this story throughout the whole book. And it was about 100 extra pages, but it was brilliantly done. So I would hope that there are more books in the future that have these fables. And there was another book, a graphic novel by Rich Horwath. He was on the show, and it was like 170 pages of a graphic novel. And it was all about business strategy. And I just told him, I said, you've just made it so difficult for anyone else who's going to do this. Because, I mean, it's very difficult and very expensive to do one of those. But he did it. And it was really compelling. And he said, yeah, I was hoping to make it difficult for everyone else. Plus, you really have to know what you're talking about if you put it in a graphic novel.
Thank you so much for joining us today on Marketing Study Lab. It really means the world that you're listening to this out there. And hopefully I've provided you some value. If you're looking to know more about what Marketing Study Lab does and is about, go to marketingstudylab.co.uk or get in touch with me personally, LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, or feel free to email me at peter@marketingstudylab.co.uk. Happy marketing.